Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, June 19th, 2014. I beg your pardon, today is Thursday, June 19th, 2014. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemire.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Police in Harare today arrested the Sunday Mail editor Edmund Kudzai and are also looking for Zimbabwe Independent editor Dumisani Muleya.
Obviously, it's a bit of a surprise, especially considering that even the editors of state-controlled newspapers are being targeted. We saw the president launching a vitriolic attack on Professor Jonathan Moyo.
Zimbabwe today officially launched a campaign against rape with Vice President Joyce Mujuru declaring war against rapists.
A total number of 3,571 adult women and 7,411 female juveniles were raped. Ladies and gentlemen, these trends are unacceptable.
We'll also give you an update of matches being played in the 2014 World Cup in Brazil. Stay tuned. Police in Harare today arrested the Sunday Mail editor Edmund Kudzai and are also after Zimbabwe Independent editor Dumisani Muleya. In a seemingly related matter, the home of Chronicle editor Mdudusi Matutu was broken into last night by as yet unidentified people. The Herald newspaper is reporting that armed police demanded access to Kudzai's office and took a laptop, cell phone and other electronic gadgets and caught MDCT debate disc for April 29, 2014. This raid came after police had visited Kudzai's hillside home in Harare. Newsday is confirming that police also visited their sister paper, the Zimbabwe Independent, asking for Muleya's home address. Muleya is on leave.
Sources at the Zimbabwe Independent say police refused to disclose why they were after Muleya, as they could only say it was, quote, business. It is not clear if the raids are linked to recent complaints by President Robert Mugabe that Information Minister Jonathan Moyo is a, quote, counter-revolutionary who had employed ZANU-PF enemies as editors at Zim Papers, unquote. ZANU-PF insiders say the attack on Moyo came after a faction allegedly led by Vice President Joyce Mujuru complained that Moyo was using the state media to prop up rival faction leader Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa. But Mujuru and Mnangagwa have denied allegations that they lead factions. Efforts to get a comment from Police Senior Assistant Commissioner Charity Charamba and Moyo were futile, as they were said to be attending meetings. Zimbabwe Union of Journalists Secretary General Foster Dongozi condemned the raids.
We are very concerned, very deeply concerned by the developments that took place this morning. Very unfortunate developments, I must add. A colleague in Bulawayo, Mdudusi Matutu, the editor of the Chronicle, also had a similar experience, except that his house was burgled early this morning. And it is very difficult not to link the burglary to the developments that were happening in Harare. We hope that this is not a harbinger of worse things to come in the public media through the form of witch hunts and the other very unfortunate developments, which again will serve to put Zimbabwe on the media spotlight, not for good reasons, but for very negative developments.
We understand that Mr. Kudzai so far does not have any legal representation. Is there any effort being made by ZUJ to assist him?
Well, obviously, this is a very sensitive case, and we have made our own efforts through inquiries. At this moment, I'm not at liberty to say what it is that we have done, but certainly one thing that we have done is to demand that he is safe and protected from any undue harm.
That was Zimbabwe Union of Journalists Secretary General Foster Dongozi speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Political analyst Ernest Mudzengi, who is also director of the Media Center, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that ZANU-PF factional fights are to blame for the raids.
Obviously, it's a bit of a surprise, especially considering that even the editors of state-controlled newspapers are being targeted. But as you probably may be aware, the last week or week were eventful. They were eventful in that we saw the president launching a vitriolic attack on Professor Jonathan Moyo. And one of the issues that the professor is being accused of is that of appointing into editorships of state-controlled newspapers, people who have previously been known to attack President Mugabe and his government. So it's not from that angle surprising that the editor is of the Sunday Mail and the Chronicle are being targeted. You are well aware of the fact that these are people who previously have been seen to be anti-ZANU-PF, and now they have been appointed, and there is a disgruntlement within ZANU-PF over the appointment.
So you are basically tracing this back to factionalism within ZANU-PF?
Yeah, it's an impression, I would say, that it is something that one would probably, in trying to hazard an answer to all this thing.
That was political analyst Ernest Mudzengi, also director of the Media Center, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Still on the arrest of the Sunday Mail editor, the breaking news is that four charges were laid against him, including plotting insurgents and terrorism and undermining the office of the authority of the president.
Zimbabwe Today officially launched a campaign against rape with Vice President Joyce Mujuru declaring war against rapists. Ndimiyake Mwakalele gives us the report.
Officially launching the campaign today at the Harare International Conference Center, Vice President Joyce Mujuru said more than 10,000 women and girls were raped between 2012 and the first quarter of 2014.
Statistics from the ZRP indicate that in 2012 to the first quarter of 2014, a total number of 3,571 adult women and 7,411 female juveniles were raped. Ladies and gentlemen, these trends are unacceptable.
Mrs. Mujuru said this violation against women's and children's rights is a slap in the face of the country's efforts to contain rising cases of rape.
This launch is coming against the backdrop of some gruesome incidences of rape reported in the media, where this little five-year-old ruptured her uterus when the uncle abused her.
She said rape cases were also prevalent in churches in Zimbabwe, a situation that she says is worrying.
When the church is the moral watchdog of society, it has been revealed that some pastors and prophets are praying on their flock.
According to the vice president, some cases of rape are linked to forced marriages and other negative traditional practices, she says, that have to end.
Child marriages, pledging of girls for the purposes of appeasing the spirits, and forced wives' inheritance. It has also been blamed on ritual purposes. Some perpetrators believe that having sex with either a minor or a virgin will help them cure AIDS.
Attributing the high level of rape cases also to poverty and alcohol abuse, Mrs. Mujuru urged the country's courts to impose stiffer penalties on perpetrators.
Alcohol and drug abuse and also poverty and parental neglect are cited as some of the causes. There is, therefore, an urgent need to take sterner measures to ensure that this cancer is nipped in the bud.
Speaking at the same occasion, Gender Minister Opa Muchinguri said Zimbabwe should use the new constitution to tackle high cases of rape. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, this is Ndimyake Mwakalielie.
AIDS activists say although the supply of antiretroviral drugs is slightly improved in the country, few CD4 count machines in medical centers is making it difficult for people living with HIV/AIDS to constantly monitor their progress in fighting the disease. Activist Obet Banda tells reporter Standikle Mhlanga some of his colleagues living with the virus have gone for almost a year without the required regular checkup, which could compromise their health.
It's very hard these days to access CD4 cell count machine in government hospitals, Bulawayo City Council, in clinics. There are very few. But if you go to the clinics, you find probably in a week, maybe they take about 10 clinic by clinic. But probably in that clinic, people will be needing a CD4 cell count. Maybe it will be about 100 or 200. Because there are people who have gone maybe for a year or 1 year, 6 months without having a CD4 cell count. If your CD4 cell count is increasing, so at least they know that the drugs are working very well.
What about access to ARVs and treatment for opportunistic infections?
As far as I'm concerned, I think they are now accessible. Even if you go to the city council, Bulawayo City Council clinic, even if you go to the government hospital, even those who connect to their drugs, even in the army barracks, they seem they are accessible very well. And then when we come to the opportunistic infections drugs, as far as I'm concerned, I know if you go to the city council clinic, you present your opportunistic infection, you are given, and there's no payment for that. Because there are other NGOs that are assisting with opportunistic infection drugs.
That was AIDS activist Obet Banda on the line with Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
With young people in Africa constituting nearly 60% of the total population, the United States, through its programs like President Barack Obama's Young African Leaders Initiative, is moving to build the emerging demographic of young African leaders in hopes they return home to invigorate their countries. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo has the story.
United States Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Africa David Gilmore says his country is vested in the merging of young leaders of Africa and America. In an interview with Studio 7, Gilmore says the U.S. is targeting Africa's youth because they are the next leaders of Africa.
We recognize that about 60% of the population in most African countries is under the age of 35. And so, you know, we recognize it's very important to that the United States should reach out and get to know that emerging generation of new generation of African leaders.
Initiatives like the Young African Leaders Initiative, or YALI, launched by President Barack Obama in 2010, offers examples of how the U.S. is trying to link African and American youth leaders. Gilmore explains that the YALI program, now in its third year and boasting 500 participants under 35, also shows that African youth want to return to their countries.
We rely on the young leaders who come and participate in this program to go home and give back and to mentor other young and up-and-coming leaders and to pass along, you know, what they've learned and to build their own network.
For Zimbabwean youths, like many of their African counterparts, finding resources to move past their prevailing challenges has been a main issue. For Zimbabwe, which has lagged behind in various sectors such as governance and economic growth, youth say programs like these assist them in networking and building resources to assist them in their professional careers. Gilmore agrees, adding that this year's 30 participants from Zimbabwe are driven to be game changers.
What's reassuring for me is that there's just a tremendous amount of talent in Zimbabwe. And, of course, education levels are very high in Zimbabwe, so candidates are really good. And particularly, I think, in the business and entrepreneur sector, I've met so many young Zimbabweans who have tremendous ideas in business.
He says given the opportunity to do so, these young leaders can make real sustainable changes in their home communities.
And of course, this applies not only to Zimbabwe, but all across the continent. And our feeling is that the talent is there, the ideas are there, the energy are there with these young leaders. And really, they just need an opportunity to be kind of unleashed and let their creativity flow.
The U.S. has pledged to continue supporting Yali and other youth following their return home. Gilmore says he is certain of Africa's economic and social growth by youth through their various programs, which include Trade Africa, which facilitates a trade between African countries, Global Food and Health Initiatives.
There will be an ongoing program of engagements with them, and we'll work with them and with alumni associations in their home countries to keep them connected with each other and to offer possibilities for ongoing enrichment and kind of professional development opportunities.
Gilmore dismisses the claims by skeptics of Yali and other programs that the U.S. is only entrenching its interests in the continent. He emphasizes that America is working through youth to build the continent. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Tatenda Gumbo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
we take a closer look at attempts to curb rape in Zimbabwe.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A former Liberian President Charles Taylor has asked to be moved out of jail in Britain, where he is serving a 50-year sentence for war crimes. Lawyers for Taylor say he has appealed to be transferred to Rwanda because his imprisonment in Britain is unlawfully prevents him from receiving visits from his family in Africa. Taylor is appealing to the UN-backed tribunal in The Hague. In 2012, the UN-backed Special Court for Sierra Leone found Taylor guilty of war crimes and crimes against humanity for aiding rebels during Sierra Leone's 11-year civil war that ended in 2002.
An expert with the World Wildlife Fund, WWF, says Mozambique has emerged as one of the main locations for elephant slaughters and the illegal transportation of ivory in Africa. Wildlife trade policy expert Coleman Okriodane commented on a Thursday report that says as many as 900 elephants died in northern Mozambique during a three-year period that ended in 2013. The Wildlife Conservation Group says many of the deaths are likely a result of illegal hunting. The WWF says urgent international action is needed to stop the slaughter of elephants.
And the number of Americans collecting unemployment benefits has fallen to the lowest level in more than 6 years. The U.S. Labor Department said Thursday that 312,000 jobless workers made first-time claims for compensation last week, down 6,000 from the week before. That left about 2.5 million Americans collecting unemployment compensation, the lowest figure since October 2007, 2 months before the country's steep recession began.
As indicated earlier on, rape cases are on the increase in Zimbabwe, and the government says time has come for all citizens to declare war against rape. For perspective, Studio 7's Ntunga Milinkomo speaks with Magodonga Mahlangu of Woza and Jonah Gokova of Padare Enkundleni.
This issue is really a cause for concern in Zimbabwe because the rate is very high and it ranges from the young people to the elderly people. But you cannot think that someone can rape such an elderly person. So it's really a cause of concern, especially for us human rights defenders and as a parent and a mother. It's really a cause of concern.
Mr. Gokova, what should be done to eradicate this scourge?
It's a national problem that is affecting us. This issue is getting out of hand, and I think it is high time we should begin to address men directly, challenge men to say, how do we end this problem? Because what's happening now is we talk about violence against women, we talk about these increasing cases of rape and so on and so forth, but men in our country still remain invisible as if they are not part of this problem. So men need to appreciate that we are part of this problem. We have heard men saying, well, it's not happening in my home, so I'm okay. And what we're saying is that if it is happening next door, then you must be concerned.
In terms of legislating, Ms. Mahlangu, clearly we have enough laws to punish offenders. Still, the problem continues. Where exactly is the problem?
There are two aspects to this problem. One is the implementation, and the other thing is the society as a whole. I think in families, we need to start to talk to our children. We need to be open about their safety, the protection of our children. Because most of the rape, especially in young girls and in the young people, is a girl's relative. And then the family prefer to protect the perpetrator because it's a family member. It's normally the auntie, at times, in some situations, that is really said, in fact, that is the father. So if there is a problem, and the perpetrator is a breadwinner, because of poverty, economic, the mother then or the family tends to look at, we cannot take a legal action against the person because the person is a breadwinner. So these are some of the things that I think as a society we need to say, enough is enough, let us protect the innocent person who's being raped and then let the law take its course against the perpetrator.
As you have said, we have got a number of laws that we can use to reduce the levels of violence and rape cases. But I think what is also needed is a complementary campaign in terms of awareness raising so that people are aware that they shouldn't be doing the things that they are doing. Particularly men, I'm talking about men should be made aware that they should not violate women's spaces, they can violate women's bodies at will. I think this needs to stop.
If I may zero in on a specific case, Ms. Mahlangu, a few years ago, we saw Mr. Mugabe pardoning a convicted rapist, Godfrey Nzira. And the question really is, should presidential pardons apply on rapists?
I think the presidential pardon should be really concerned about that crime that cannot be pardoned, especially like the crimes of rape. Can you imagine if someone is supposed to serve 27 years and then as a victim, I think that person is out? If this encourages a lot of people to say, okay, I can always rape someone, I can then make it be pardoned, or I can bribe my way out. That's what I'm saying. If there's something is wrong with the system, this pardon was incorrect and it was inhumane and it was very insensitive to the victim.
Mr. Gokova, for this campaign to be really effective, what should be done? How should it be carried out?
What we need to do is to ensure that all those people who are responsible for ensuring that laws are respected should also go through some kind of preparatory training. We cannot assume that because you are in government as a man, you understand what is at stake. So I think awareness programs must also target officers of government. And then at another level, we should be going at a level where we are also targeting men who are in the street and in the various institutions that exist in the country. But I think that a lot of publicity is required now. Let's take advantage of this launch so that we can begin to put a lot of material on the media.
Briefly, Ms. Mahlangu, your final take.
What Gokova is saying is that we should really intensify the campaign. But the other thing that I think we need to really look into is the victim-friendly police station, because at times they're not that friendly. Because I, as a college incident, where a victim went and tried to report to the police officer, demanding that the office asks, what did you do?
That was Magodunga Mahlangu of Woza and Jonah Gokova of Padare Nkundleni speaking with Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo.
Coming up, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The key suspect in the deadly 2012 attack on the U.S. diplomatic compound in Benghazi, Libya, has been captured by U.S. special forces. Ahmed Abu Qatala will now face the full weight of the U.S. justice system. The arrest of Ahmed Abu Qatala, said U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, is a clear reminder to anyone who seeks to harm the United States that they will be brought to justice. Four Americans were killed on the night of September 11, 2012, when armed assailants attacked the U.S. special mission in Benghazi, Libya. Four American personnel, including Ambassador Christopher Stevens, were killed in the violence. It was the first time since 1979 that a U.S. ambassador was killed in the line of duty. The United States, which captured Katala unilaterally, continues to work through its embassy in Tripoli with Libya's democratically elected institutions to advance shared interests, including establishing rule of law and stability throughout the country. The United States stood by the Libyan people 3 years ago as they rose up against the tyrant Muammar Gaddafi. The United States continues to support them in their desire to build democratic institutions that will provide them with security, protect their universal rights, and help rebuild their economy. In an official statement, U.S. Secretary of State Kerry said the vision of a peaceful and productive new nation will guide Libya's future, and they have a friend in the United States as they pursue that vision. "We will remain vigilant against all acts of terrorism," said President Barack Obama in an official statement. "We will also sustain our support for the Libyan people as they work to overcome years of tyranny and do the difficult work of building a democracy."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com.
In our sports segment, Thursday features pivotal matches for four teams at the World Cup in Brazil as England, Uruguay, Greece, and Japan try to avoid a second loss that would knock them out of contention. In Sao Paulo, Uruguay could get a boost from striker Luis Suarez in its match against England. Suarez missed Uruguay's opening loss to Costa Rica as he recovers from knee surgery last month. Studio 7's Marvelous Mthlanganyawuye turns to Cote d'Ivoire fan Linod Modo on her perspective on today's match.
Hi, it's Nico Pino, live from Brazil, in Brasilia.
Nico, we saw Cameroon bowing out yesterday, but Africa is very disappointed at the way the game ended. Were you at the match, and what was your feeling as you were watching Cameroon sinking 4-0 to Croatia?
Yeah, and I'm very frustrated too. I watched the Cameroonese team playing, and it was awful. I mean, the red card, the fact that two players at the end of the game, they fought each other, it was incredible. And it was really sad for people living in Cameroon. They came especially in Brazil. They paid thousands of dollars. And the people I interviewed yesterday, they were very, very disappointing. They said it's a shame for Africa and it's a shame for Cameroon, because you have to remember that Cameroon has not won any game in World Cup since 2002. It was a game, a victory, 1-0 versus Saudi Arabia. And since then, Cameroonese have never won any game.
Where does that leave the African teams at the moment?
So right now we have a team out. It's Cameroon. Ivory Coast is playing today and they seem pretty well, so they might advance to the next round. But then we'll have to wait, especially Ghana and Nigeria. Will they have better games as a second game? Because we know that Ghana, they did not win against the United States, who won like 2-1 against Ghana. And the Super Eagles, they will have to play big. And it was a shame for the African champions. And then you have Algeria, who lost the game against Belgium, 1-2. So we'll see. But I think we can see at least one team for the next round here in Brazil.
Thank you, Nico Pino, giving us an insight into what's going on there in Brasilia, in Brazil, tonight.
Thank you so much.
We apologize. That was Voice of America sports commentator Nico Pino in Brasilia, Brazil.
Now, before we go, a quick recap of today's top stories.
Police in Harare today arrested the Sunday Mail editor Edmund Kudzai and are also looking after Zimbabwe independent editor Dumisani Muleya.
Zimbabwe today.